Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of reimaginedonline.org, covering the stories in the new world of public education. On this episode, Reimagine's executive editor Matt Ladner and Step Up for Students president Doug Tuthill discuss Ladner's new white paper on student transportation for the Arizona Charter School Association. The traditional yellow bus transportation system was already in decline before the COVID pandemic, which in turn led to unprecedented demand for drivers that has left the public transportation system in trouble. What innovations can be made to reimagine the system in a world with ubiquitous education choice? That question and more on this episode of Podcast Ed. Thank you for listening and enjoy the episode.
Today, I'm excited to have Matt Ladner on our podcast. Matt is the executive editor of Step Up's blog, formerly called Redefined, but now called Reimagined. As our listeners know, because you've been on this blog a lot, Public Education Day is expanding and getting redefined and reimagined as we move from a one-size-fits-all system to a system organized around empowerment, decentralization, and customization. Today, Matt and I are going to discuss reimagining the public education transportation system. The impetus for our conversation is a recent white paper Matt wrote for the Arizona Charter Schools Association focused on improving equity through the modernization of Arizona's K-12 education system. So Matt, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So why don't you define the problem? You do a great job in the paper, but I think our listeners would like to hear how you define the transportation problem as we transition to a more robust public education system.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's like three big points, I guess, right? Number one is that student transportation is a gigantic equity issue. We illustrate this in the study by imagining a family that lives at the address of the Arizona Capitol building in downtown Phoenix. And we basically show that if you're a seventh grader, your child is a seventh grader there, if they're going to be reliant on the yellow bus system, they'll probably have one option. If they can travel up to 3 miles round trip daily, of course, along with the bell schedule, right, which is a problem for a lot of families. They can choose between 5 different schools for the seventh grader. And if they can make it to 6 miles, 6 mile round trip, they have 19 different schools to choose between. These are all public schools, district and charter. If you're a family that doesn't own a car or your work schedule doesn't match up with the bell schedule, those other options, many of which are really very high quality schools that have strong ratings from the community and strong academic ratings from websites like Great Schools and Niche, they're going to be sort of tantalizingly out of your reach, right? We replicated this exercise in the previous territorial capitals of Arizona, which are located in Prescott and Tucson. Basically, it's the same story. It's the same dish with slightly different flavor. So the ability to get to your choice schools is very important, and it's something we've kind of neglected for a long time here. That's point number one. Point number two is that the yellow bus system was in steep decline in Arizona for years before COVID-19 struck, right? National and state data don't exactly agree on the details on this, but they do agree on the direction. So in Arizona, all property tax, property owners and also people who rent indirectly pay a separate, property tax to support the district yellow bus system, right? Ridership on that system declined between 2012 and 2019. And in 2019, so before the pandemic, it was down to about 23% of public school students in Arizona were taking the yellow bus. Now, at some point in the past, this was more like half the students were taking the yellow bus, right? Finally, the pandemic is much, much more than just a bump in the road. If you remember, Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises, right? There's that scene where one character asks another character, like, how did you go bankrupt? And his response was, oh, two ways, gradually and then suddenly, okay? The COVID-19 pandemic is the suddenly part of the story, because in the years before, there were two big issues in Arizona, one of which is applicable across the country. The first big problem, the gradually part of the story, is that it is required for bus drivers to have a commercial driver's license in order to drive a yellow school bus. And gradually, but steadily, the career prospects for the holder of a CDL driver's license got better and better and better. Okay. There are, some firms that you may have heard of, Amazon, FedEx, Instacart, right? All of these firms not only want to hire CDL holders, they want them to work full time, and they want to pay them all kind of give them all sorts of benefits, right? School bus driver is not a full time job. It has odd hours. It's not necessarily it's a challenging job, right? But it's a challenging job with part time pay and no benefits, right? So in the years before the pandemic, as Arizona was sort of sliding down to 23% riding the yellow bus, a bus driver shortage was a part of the problem. The other problem, though, is just the simple fact that here in the Phoenix area, that more than half of the students do not attend their zone district school, right? Open enrollment is sort of the biggest player in that. Kids do a lot of transferring between district schools here in Arizona, between districts, within the same districts, going to magnet schools, all of those sorts of things. We also have the nation's largest charter school sector, where about 22% of students attending charter schools now. And, districts try to, get more out of their bus system than, it only takes you to your zone district school. But for the most part, the system is still designed to take you to your zone district school. But when half of kids aren't going to their zone district school, the bus system gets a lot more difficult to make itself useful, right? So bottom line, the COVID thing, the suddenly part of the story, right? Suddenly there's a pandemic. The schools are closed. The demand for CDL license holders skyrockets, right? We're all having stuff delivered to our front door, right? More than ever during the pandemic, because people don't want to go to the grocery store, et cetera, right? A lot of those people, there's work to be had, and people really want to hire them, right? And as schools started to reopen for this fall, what the districts had left, so to speak, were people, mostly people who did not want to work full time. That included a lot of retirees, a lot of retirees were not anxious to get into a small enclosed space with a lot of kids who had not been vaccinated, so they didn't come back. Okay. So Doug, where this left us is, around the country, right, you can just Google the phrase like school bus crisis, right, and you can read all about it. Here in Arizona, like everywhere else, there were whole fields of district yellow buses sitting idle, on school day mornings because they just didn't have drivers for them, right? And I think the final point is that this isn't going to change, right? There are things that on the margin districts can and are trying to do to, alleviate this problem, right? They are going to, paying signing bonuses and increasing their hourly rates, but I don't like their chances to outbid Amazon. Amazon is not going away. There are surveys that indicate that, very large portions of parents are reticent to have their children vaccinated, right? And maybe that will wane over time. But basically, this leaves us in a situation where, we need to figure out every way possible to get kids to school that do not involve CDL license holders, right? So this is going to be a big spur for transportation innovation.
Of course, the term equity is in the title of your paper. So I presume that the transportation crisis you just articulated is particularly detrimental to families who don't have access to alternative transportation. I presume that's sort of an obvious part of part of the point you're making.
Yeah. You know, there was a good study of open enrollment that Fordham did in Ohio last year, I believe. And they found definite academic benefits to children who used open enrollment transfers. And they found that the benefits were largest for African-American students, right? And unfortunately, in Ohio, you know, all the big urban districts are surrounded by suburban districts who don't participate in open enrollment, right?
Yeah.
Fortunately, and to the credit of our districts here in Arizona, that's not the case here, right? You know, our districts do, for individual schools, both gain and lose students through open enrollment, right? And it's, you know, not everyone loves that process, but it's clearly had very large academic benefits for the state. But those large benefits, you know, in the long run, this could be healthy if we manage to improve our transportation system so that it is more inclusive of people who, you know, whose work schedules or economic circumstances do not allow them to, take their kids to school every day. And I can tell you that it's a common sight here on the roads in Phoenix in the morning to see a whole bunch of cars piled up out into the street because everyone is driving their kid to school, right? Probably the low-hanging fruit here. Bellwether did a study back in 2017, and they found that 54% of students were getting to school in a privately owned vehicle back in 2017, right? So just for starters, that makes every empty seat in one of those vehicles that is otherwise going to school an opportunity to both get a kid going to where they need to go, and also to take a vehicle off the road, right, to lessen congestion and all those sort of things.
Yeah, I can tell you this is also a problem in Florida. I'm amazed at how many times I see empty school buses. I mean, you have these massive school buses, and there's usually three or four kids all times of the day, morning and in the evenings. No one's riding the school buses, and they're driving all over. They're driving all over, and they're tying up traffic. And so, you know, there's problems of getting school buses with drivers on the road, but there's also a problem of people just refusing to ride school buses. So, you basically offer two solutions in your paper, two broad solutions. You talk about proximity, and then you talk innovation around new ways of thinking about transportation. Let's talk about proximity for a moment. How do you see proximity as part of the solution, increasing proximity of more schools to families?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's the Bellwether study found that only 10% of kids nationwide were either walking or biking to school. And I think that tells us something about our, we got into the habit of building really, really large, but kind of remote school campuses, right? And which will automatically happen, right? If your aim is to have 5,000 kids going to the same school, by definition, that school will not be very close to very many kids, right? At least as a percentage basis, right? So we sort of got away from localism, right? And I do think that part of the solution, you know, the trend towards microschooling here in Arizona, you know, I know you interviewed Kelly Smith from Prenda a few months back, you know, that's one way that these schools are very small, but they're also super proximate, right? So, you know, the more we have in the way of choice When we have new charter schools open up in neighborhoods, there's a whole group of kids that can just walk or bike to school at that point. It's not a complete solution, but nothing is going to be a complete solution, right? I think that the reality that we're in with this situation is that we are going to have to kind of flood the zone with as many possible solutions as we can come up with, because a cure-all is not on the offering.
So maybe an expansion of things like ESAs, educational savings accounts, would allow more micro-schooling to happen, more homeschool co-ops to be accessible to more families. And that proliferation of more options would, of course, deal with the proximity issue, because now families would have more opportunities, particularly in urban areas where, there's a lot of folks around who may be able to be in a position to create more micro schools that are viable, and more homeschool co-ops that are viable. So that could be a huge solution. I also was wondering, while you were talking, this is a little bit of a crazy idea, but could you begin to think about, as more and more kids attend private schools on publicly funded scholarships, could you start to mold in or blend in the private school community into the transportation infrastructure? Is that part of the way to get more? I know it's probably terrifying for school districts to think about their kids on the same bus with private school kids, but you can think about sort of maximizing the effectiveness and efficiency by trying to combine as many options as possible and use that transportation to get kids out to as many options as possible.
Yeah, there's a strong case for that here, because again, everybody pays a school a separate property tax to fund the bus system, right? And the cost of that bus system here in the state of Arizona, according to the Arizona Auditor General's office, just between 2012 and 2019, it's basically doubled. It went from like $191 million to $380 million, okay? But the number of kids riding the buses was declining, right? So now if I were a private school parent, and it's not just private school parents, right? It's like when I was a young parent, my two sons did open enrollment within a school district here in Arizona. And by district rule, we were allowed to do open enrollment, but we were told just point blank, it's completely up to you to get them to school. They're not allowed to ride on the bus, right? And But the more you think about it, you're like, well, wait a minute, I paid my bus tax, right? So since everyone pays their bus tax, I would argue actually it shouldn't even be thought of as a bus tax. This ought to be thought of as a school transportation tax. And there is a case to be made that everyone should be able to benefit in one way from a system of transportation. That is going to require us to have a far more flexible, multimodal, varied system. But if you think about, especially in Arizona's context, but in many other places as well, right? Because there are other places like Florida and Arizona, but there's other states coming our way, right?
Yeah.
The old system of zip code assignment had all kinds of problems, and we talk about them on the blog all the time, right? But it did make transportation really easy, right? You have kids in an attendance boundary, you run a bus in the attendance boundary, problem solved, right? Well, that system created more problems than it solved, right? And so we're doing well to be rid of it. But it enormously complicates transportation, right? This really does. And it makes the yellow bus system, to paraphrase Governor Bush, right, that makes it a little bit of a 8-track player in a music streaming world, right? It's an old system that was developed 80 years ago for a bygone world here in Phoenix. It's not to say that we should get rid of the buses, right? We still need them, right? Those 23%, it's certainly less than 23% now, right? There's all kinds of routes were canceled and all that sort of stuff. But, it's going to really require us to stretch our reform muscles, because Again, like this isn't a temporary situation. I have no reason to expect this isn't basically a permanent condition until we do something about it.
So let's talk about some of your innovative solutions. I mean, you had some pretty interesting outside the lines ideas, which of course is typical for Matt Ladner. So share some of the ideas you think that might help us begin to reimagine. And I like the way you talked about it, not a bus system, but a transportation system, which opens it up to all kinds of other options. So talk about some of those other options.
Yeah, I mean, the credit for this really goes to Governor Doug Ducey and Emily Ann Gullickson from Mayfair, Arizona. Governor Ducey pushed a competitive grant program through the Arizona legislature last session, which turns out to have been profoundly wise because, you know, like the national meltdown on school bus drivers was not in the media yet. But it created a competitive grant process for not just schools, districts, cities, community colleges, nonprofits, anyone and everyone. They basically said, you know, come up with innovative solutions and you know, we'll fund the ones, as many of the good ones as we can. They just announced their first round of gifts yesterday, and I think this is incredibly important to allow the field to kind of create their own solutions from the bottom up, because it simply cannot be done any other way, right? Nobody knows better than the field how this could work better, right? You know. So that's one important solution. In the study, we outline a pilot program that happened in Minneapolis back in 2013, where they simply gave municipal bus passes to all high school students, right? Now, riding the municipal bus is not a solution for every single, right? But this is the kind of thinking we have to get ourselves out of, right? Either a solution is everyone's solution or it's no good.
Right.
No, that's not how this works, right? There was an academic evaluation performed by university professors of that program, and they found that it increased attendance and reduced truancy, right? And when they surveyed the students, they were like, yeah, it was really great that we had more than one chance to get on the bus to get us to school. Before, it was like you either get on that yellow bus like right at the exactly right time, or you just don't go to school that day, right? And it was also very helpful with extracurricular activities, right?
Right, sure.
And it's really odd, but most municipal bus systems are not configured in a way to help with school transport, right? They're separate silos, right? So that's something that could be done. I know that a municipal bus pass / light rail pass here in Phoenix costs $31 a month, right? I mean, that's for a student. That's pretty reasonable, right? Now, is it going to help everyone? Nope. Could it help a lot of kids? Yes, right? You know, carpooling, you know, and by carpooling, I don't mean like, you know, let's cheerlead for carpools. Like, I think we need to actually put resources into carpooling to cover people's costs, you know, to give them a financial incentive to take kids, you know, other people's kids to school, right? That sort of thing. Those vehicles are, especially vehicles that are going there anyway with empty seats, right? This is your chance to take vehicles on off the road, to have less pollution, get more kids to going to where they need to go. One of the things that we didn't actually highlight in the study, but they passed last year here, is an in-lieu grant. So district and charter schools in Arizona now have the option of basically just giving transportation money to their families instead of providing transportation to them, right? It's a permissive thing. They are allowed to do that now. You know, we'll have to see how many actually choose to do it. But you know, there's a potential solution there. Of course, there are specialized ride sharing firms that have emerged. These firms have extra background checks and additional security, which is appropriate in transporting, especially young children. It'll be interesting to see what kind of role they wind up playing. So, but you know, basically, You know, the nonprofits are also important, right? I think that the Boys and Girls Clubs were some of the early grantees for the Transportation Innovation Grants. You know, I think they could play a productive and healthy role in helping to coordinate efforts amongst families. So, again, none of this is going to be, you know, the end all be all solution, but I do think that it was profoundly wise to have a competitive grant process. And some of this stuff is just going to be, you know, apparently there's some sort of federal law that forbids schools from buying a 15-passenger van for purposes of student transport to and from school. It is not against the law, from what I understand, to buy such a van that is used, but you're not supposed to buy a new one. this is completely ridiculous, and it needs to change. So, you know, this is going to be messy. I'm really, really grateful that our lawmakers sort of, you know, saw this coming and started to take action. But, you know, in the big picture, you know, it's still the case that, you know, as of 2019, we were spending $380 million to transport 23% of kids, and basically everyone else was getting, you know, something much smaller than that, if anything, right? So there's a long way to go in this to modernize effort and actually expand opportunity, especially for disadvantaged kids.
You know, I gave a talk to one of our House Education Committees the other day, and I used this analogy, which is, imagine the national transportation system is all trains, railroads, and suddenly you want to go to airplanes. Well, you have to build a whole new infrastructure, because it turns out the airplanes can't land and take off in train stations. It turns out the airplanes can't follow the signals on the railroad tracks about when to stop and when to move tracks, et cetera. It actually turns out airplanes don't follow tracks. Right. So what I think we're doing now is, and transportation is a wonderful example, if we're sitting back and saying, you know what, that old infrastructure doesn't work, whether it's a funding mechanism, whether it's how people spend money, whether it's how they get transported, you know, across the board, even physical infrastructure, you know, all that infrastructure we built from a one size fits all, you know, industrial assembly line from the late 1800s that we basically have had ever since, including things like transportation. All that infrastructure is suddenly not necessarily fitting. The same way that a national train system wouldn't necessarily support a national airline system. So I just think we're building in a whole new infrastructure. And as we move along, things keep popping up. Like, yep. Yikes, I never thought of that. I got to build that now. Yikes, I never thought of that. I got to build that now. Yep. And so I think we're going through this process. We'll probably go through this for the next decade or two, where we're constantly finding things that we have to rebuild because right. They don't fit in the new world. And I do think you've done a great service pointing out the transportation issues, because if kids can't get there, it doesn't really matter. And so what we have to do is figure out really how to reinvent and reimagine transportation. And I love the kind of ideas you put on the table. So thank you for that, Matt.
No, thank you. Yeah, I think we're just slowly morphing our way to being a little less Flintstones and a little more Jetsons. it's going to take a while, but we're going to get there.